it may be worth a try as a warning.
You could try it, but there are certain things, like for instance, I love progesterone, I literally bathe in it, but my daughter cannot take it at all. She has severe endometriosis and it makes her symptoms horrible. So, you know, when we talk about hormones, really we're talking about an art.
Yes.
Don't think of it like a science at all. And you really have to find a clinician who will listen to you and diagnose you clinically, much like Lyme, okay, in that the tests usually stink. And everybody is so different.
And that's why Schellenberg says a clinical trial of one, you know, you just gotta, and things cause what they cure. You know, progesterone can cause sedation, but it can also cause somebody to be hyper, and so with melatonin, you know, so there's always that potential. So Dr., I can't pronounce his name, Dana? B-U-H-N-E-R, Stephen Boehner, Healing Lyme?
Buhner,
okay. He advocates melatonin for Lyme-initiated sleep disruption. The other thing with insomnia that I've noticed, it's important to pay attention to foods that trigger adrenaline. Consumption of sugar or alcohol in the evening can cause blood sugar to go up, and then it drops in the middle of the night. When it drops, the body kicks out cortisol to bring you, body doesn't like low blood sugar in the middle of the night. Wants to bring it up because you can die. I mean, and I'm not talking, you don't have low blood sugar like diabetics have low blood sugar, but it still goes up and comes down and your body feels it, kicks out cortisol. Cortisol bathes your body and you have heart palpitations, anxiety. If you get too much or that rapid rush of cortisol and you can't go back to sleep, classic, if you can't fall back to sleep after you wake up, classic cortisol rush in the middle of the night. Then you have to go backwards and say, what did I eat? You know, or what did I ingest or drink? And that's where a food symptom diary is really important. Does anybody ever have done that? Food symptom diaries? To figure it all out.
Track your food and see what.
Right, pick your symptom. If your major symptom is it in sleeplessness. You wake up at 3 or you can't fall asleep. And hopefully you can catch yourself having a good night, because that's what's important, you know. If it's all that way all the time, maybe a hormone or a nutrition deficiency. But if you have some good nights and some, but mostly bad nights, if you can catch yourself with a good night, think about, what did I do? You know, I mean, it's not that simple, but it helped me a lot. So this waking up in the middle of the night is all called liver insomnia. And liver insomnia, this is an old-fashioned term coined by an old country doctor, and he says eating a piece of fruit in the middle of the night will shut off the cortisol, because what you're doing with a piece of fruit, you keep a half a banana by your bed, you're raising that blood sugar a little bit, and then that blood sugar tells the adrenals, okay, you can cut off the cortisol now, and you'll be able to go back to sleep. I have tried it, and it seems quite remarkable, actually.
Just remember, though, that Lyme itself can do this. And so I just found that with treatment, it went away.
Oh, yeah. Waking up.
The waking up thing was a definite stint in my journey. But then with treatment, thankfully, I don't do that anymore.
Can I just ask you, how mine got worse as I got better? I mean, when I really had Lyme bad, I didn't have trouble sleeping.
I'm wondering if you might have an underlying hormonal issue that was kind of covered up by the Lyme, and now that you're peeling away the layers, you might start to see, oh, maybe I've got a thyroid cortisol issue that needs to be addressed. That's what's so complicated about all this.
Or yeast from the antibiotics, you know, which we'll go into a little bit later.
I don't take antibiotics, the drug, and I do have thyroid issues, and I do take thyroid, and I always have.
Right. Well, he said, Dr. Platt says that the timing and types of food ingested can make a significant difference in the release of adrenaline. So, and there's a little book on the table, Dr. Coca. He has a book called The Pulse Test, written in 1956. And there's a simple method to determining whether you're producing adrenaline after you eat. You take your pulse, just find a pulse point, take it for a minute, write it down, wait for 15 minutes. Well, you don't really have to wait. Ingest the food that you think might be a problem, wait for 15 minutes, and take the pulse test again. If it goes up 6 beats or more per minute, you have a sensitivity to that food.
Interesting.
And it puts out adrenaline in your body. So, because the pulse, again, adrenaline governs things, in the heart rate and the pulse rate. So, You can do IgG antibody blood tests, more expense. You know, mm-hmm. US Biotech Labs is a good one. I've had all mine done, and they told me everything that I already knew, which is dairy is a complete no-no. You know, and I had known that for years, but the test just confirmed it for me. I want to move on now to pain, to pain, because it's so. And this is really exciting. Low dose naltrexone. So I'm not familiar, sure if you're familiar with low dose naltrexone, but I want to take your draw your attention to a chart in your packet. This is a website called curetogether.com. Curetogether.com. You can go to that website and put in. There's hundreds of health conditions that this group has looked at throughout the world. And they will give you a nice little chart saying, from all our data we collected across the world, what is the most popular but less helpful? That's in the bottom here. And in fact, it's what people try the most but haven't worked. The left-hand part is the least popular and the least helpful. There. Let's see, so most popular, less helpful, least popular, least helpful. Then the right hand is the, So the most popular.
Most popular is in the bottom?
Popularity is on the bottom. And effectiveness is on the left here. So up here, these are effective, but not as popular. There are things that people don't try. They don't try deep breathing, meditation, massage, those kinds of things. Avoiding alcohol. But this quadrant here in the upper left-hand corner is the one you want to pay attention to. Well, they're the least popular, but they're the most helpful. And low-dose naltrexone is right up there at the top.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I was shocked. One of the most popular... and effective. No, it's not popular, actually. It's low in the popularity because people don't know about it. It's used in Europe a lot, but not here. But it's one of the most effective therapies for pain. In pain, yes, low-dose naltrexone. I'm going to tell you what that is here. So the late Dr. Bernard Bahari, he was an internal medicine doctor in New York City in the 1980s. He was treating drug addicts with a drug called naltrexone. Naltrexone blocked the receptors for heroin and caused people to go into instant heroin withdrawal, and they had terrible side effects. He also, at that time, had noticed that his heroin addicts were starting to die from AIDS, so he searched for a drug that would be able to help these people with their pain. He knew that endorphins, are you familiar with the term endorphins? Endorphins are the little
painkillers,
bodies, natural painkillers that come on the most. Well, I'll tell you what besides low dose naltrexone, what raises endorphin levels. Kind of interesting. Aerobic exercise, chocolate, and acupuncture. Now that's just in one, I know, so we don't let you know. So that's one source. But exercise is known to raise endorphins in the body, the runner's high. So he noticed that, he knew that they had pain-relieving anti-inflammatory properties. He discovered that his HIV patients had subnormal endorphin levels. So he took his own money and he hired a laboratory tech to measure endorphin levels. And so he went about trying to figure out what kind of a low dose of the high dose naltrexone he could give and raise endorphin levels. Now how low-dose naltrexone works is that it blocks the body's endorphin receptors. So all of a sudden, it's taken at night, it can be taken in the morning too, but it's thought to best work at night because that's when the body produces your natural endorphins. So the thing is, if you're not sleeping at night, you're probably not making many of your own natural pain-fighting chemicals. And he found, so he measured their endorphin levels, and he found that his AIDS patient, he found that low-dose naltrexone increased endorphin levels by 200 to 300% in these people. So in small doses, 1.75 milligram to 4.5 milligrams a day. But it's short-acting, so it blocks the receptor. The body says, whoa, kicks in production of endorphins. But pretty soon the low-dose naltrexone leaves the receptor because it's very short-acting in the body, and then all this flood of endorphins can hit those receptors, and it works as an anti-pain, anti-inflammatory. Seems like a miracle drug. Endorphins have a positive effect on the immune system. They increase T helper cells and natural killer cells. They are known to help people with autoimmune disease like MS and certain types of cancers. He actually researched and found that cancer cells have receptors for endorphins, and he would give his cancer patients low-dose naltrexone, and they went into remission because it produced a large dose of endorphins without having a drug side effect like naltrexone had. And it causes cell death, cancer cell death. So around the world, low-dose naltrexone is used to treat fibromyalgia. Like, I think I've gone through the disorders. There's a study on Crohn's disease, autism. There is a website, lowdosenaltrexone.com. And that is, let's see. No, my newsletter is not in your packet, sorry. It's available.
It works on cancer patients also.
You know, there has been no double-blind placebo-controlled studies to show that.
I'm just curious.
He worked with about 800 or 900 people with low-dose naltrexone, and he found it worked. It worked for his cancer patients that cut, you know, caused remission for them. I don't know how many cancer patients he had. So
why isn't it's prescription, isn't it?
It is prescription, compounding pharmacies only. We're seeing more and more doctors from around the country that are ordering it. Low dose, you start at 1.5 milligram daily for a month, go to 3 milligram for another month, and 4.5 milligram, and that's usually where people stay at. And my...
A constant? They stay at the constant?
Yep. And, well, there's another website called ldnscience.org, and they have a very good website where there's lots of questions like that. I can't possibly remember all the answers, like, you know, what happens if you stop, and you know, and that kind of thing. But a pharmacist friend of mine, her husband tried it. Next day, 90% of his pain was gone. Mm-hmm. My other pharmacist friend, mother, tries it. She takes it in the morning. She's wants to take more. I mean, it's work, but she wants to take more, and you can take more. But anyway, you have experience.
Yeah,
with
there's
that
a. Patient. I'm not sure if it's the website you said or if it's .org, but there's actually videos of MS patients on there, and that is one drug I can say I knew immediately it helped me.
Yeah.
It helped me with sleep, it helped me with pain, and I went from like 2 milligrams up to slowly up to 4.5, and my husband and I both take it. It's very cheap. Theirs is very clean. The only additive is olive oil. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. But yeah, it's amazing stuff.
And if you want to know more about it, I write a newsletter column for our electronic newsletter. The other, the principal author is Carol Peterson, who is one of our senior pharmacists and does a lot of traveling around the country, going to conferences. And the next newsletter will be, my column will be on the wonders of low-dose naltrexone. And so when you fill it out, if you want to receive the electronic newsletter, put your email and also just say electronic newsletter, e-newsletter, and you'll be in time to get this new
And column. Kathy, doesn't it take a while to be in the body to really be effective?
Well, if it happens immediately.
It did for me.
Yeah, no, I think it happens pretty quick.
The only thing that I was warned about, it never happened to me, but you can have some pretty vivid dreams.
Yes.
That didn't happen to me.
Dr. Bahari was asked about the side effects, and he said poor sleep, he said, and that was around 3 milligram, and all he did was bump it back down to a lower dose. But there were two MS clinical trials conducted in this citation anyway, and they said that some people have reported vivid dreaming, so I guess that causes poor sleep, when they begin treatment. And then also in a few people there were mild abnormalities of cholesterol, blood count, and liver function, and some irritability. I had not run into any of that. The main side effect is, and in small people, is a sleeplessness. And then you can take it during the day. But you, if you're under the doctor's care, you should have a complete blood, well, with Lyme, you probably do have a complete blood count and maybe a liver panel, because I think you can get toxins in the liver too, right? Cholesterol once in a while, just as a baseline.
What was the second website you mentioned?
What, pardon?
The second website?
LDNScience.org.
The one I'm talking about is called the Naltrexone. It's a home page, but they have videos on there and just a wonderful explanation of how the drug works.
Yeah.
But another thing you might want to consider, just like all this, is see if your practitioner would give you maybe, you know, a month's supply.
Yeah.
And just try it. And it may not work for everybody, you know, just like all these things. But it's worth a try. It could be the very thing that finally gives you some sleep
and then stops
that pain cycle that we get caught in.
For sure. So you can call, and our phone number is in there too. You can call and talk to us, or you can have your practitioner call, you know, or your nurse. Maybe it's easier to get through to your nurse. Can you call them? I don't know, they're busy, you know. Some will call and discuss it, some won't. But again, you might find better luck with a doctor referral list from our company of doctors who have used us in Madison who are open to things like this. It won't say whether they've used low-dose naltrexone, but it's worth a try anyway. Dr. Mercola has
some great articles on LDN too, if you go get his articles.
And the clinical trials that are going on around the world are also at this lowdosenaltrexone.org, I think, website. So there are clinical trials going on, including MS trials in San Francisco. I'm not sure if they're done or not yet, but for pain. So I'm going to move on to chronic pain. I'm sorry, you guys fallen asleep yet?
It's not your fault.
Huh?
It's not your fault that we're falling asleep.
Oh, okay. Well, good. Well, I'll try to hurry through this. Carol Peterson wrote a wonderful article for our newsletter, which is available if you put chronic pain on your sheet, and we can send you this. So probably if you're, for time's sake, I wouldn't necessarily have to do it. Let me just quickly go through thyroid. Let's see, what is it? Dr. Mark Starr, naturopath, found that 98% of his pain patients had low thyroid. So that is the gist of that. Cortisol helps with pain. Estrogens have been cited to help with osteoarthritis pain. Animal and human studies have shown that. Progesterone, adequate progesterone levels encourage collagen formation, which helps with bones and muscles. And Dr. Ross Hauser found that supplementing progesterone can help relieve chronic pain. Oh, this is in your handout, in your packet, in this packet, actually. So you don't have to put chronic pain. Yep, this whole thing about the hormones and pain is in your packet. One of the interesting hormones is testosterone. Dr. Forrest Tennant states that testosterone deficiency is increasingly recognized in both men and women who suffer chronic pain. Adequate testosterone is required to help the body bind endorphins to the receptors and to transport hormones into the brain. Testosterone is necessary for muscles and bones, healing and inflammation. So testosterone's a big one when it comes to pain.
Question.
Yes.
Free-flowing testosterone versus a regular testosterone.
Yeah.
What's the deal?
Bound. Well, bound testosterone is circulated by a protein that binds it, takes it to all the different receptor sites, but it has to be free in order to work. So, talking about lab work and what to test? Total testosterone bound up doesn't do any good. It's the free that does as good.
Okay, so
it's beneficial.
Got a high number of free, I think, and a low of 60 on the
total.
Inactive, right? I'm not sure.
Yeah, total. That's what it's called. It's inactive. Yeah. That's good. Is it how high is? I mean, it depends on how high your free is, you know, and whether you're taking testosterone or not.
Yeah, I was taking the gel.
Yeah. Well, then that
was.
Then probably that dose needs to be bumped down a little bit.
So if you have bound testosterone but not free testosterone, how do you free your testosterone?
Well, that's a good question. That is a very good question, and I've heard that things like Swiss oat straw does it, something called yohimbine, which I would never recommend, that's supposed to do it. If you want to put sex hormone binding globulin on your sheet, I will see if I can find a reference that tells you what's going to free your testosterone. But, sir, you can call and talk to a pharmacist at Women's about specific problems, if you have problems with hormones too, and what to do, about what the pharmacist would recommend that, you do to correct that. Low vitamin D levels have also been linked with low testosterone levels. So get your vitamin D levels up there, and this is in man, your testosterone level might increase. So vitamin D is actually modulates the immune system. It helps if your immune system is overactive, it'll dampen it down. If your immune system is not responding well enough, it's going to increase the response. So vitamin D is a great all-around vitamin. So I am going to skip to cognitive dysfunction, which I'm not going to go into very much because we've kind of touched on it. I think if you fix fatigue, pain, and insomnia, you might get better cognitively as well. So melatonin, like Alicia was talking about, is helps with protect brain damage from Lyme organisms. Vitamin D helps with seasonal affective disorder, which is, you know, well, the sunshine, you know, lack of sunshine in the wintertime. There was a big Alzheimer's study that melatonin, you know, what helps with cognitive function. Melatonin helped with it, vitamin D helped with it. Gluten, no gluten, low carbohydrates, low carbohydrates. That's, you know, the big rage these days. So.
But it's true.
Yeah.
I mean, is it true?
Is it true?
Do you buy it?
There was a ton of books out there in the marketplace that, the belly diet, is it? What is that?
Wheat belly.
I bought that. I haven't read it yet. They say you can get enough. The purpose of the carbohydrates over other types of food is it can get the glucose can get in the brain because the brain needs glucose constantly. But they say you can get that from fat just as well. The carbs just cause a rush of blood sugar. You have to. The big thing is keep the blood sugar down. As we age, blood sugar can feed cancer. It can make Alzheimer's worse. You have to keep steady blood sugar levels. I like my carbs, but good carbs, of course, better than bad carbs. You know, or complex carbs are better. But the one of the bad things going around now is the low carb diet, and I'm not an expert. Paleo diet, one of the practitioners I was reading mentioned the paleo diet. Yeah, I think it was Dr. Schallenberger said that's a good diet.
Well, it's not good to eat, but it's
healthy. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know, it's not very pleasant. Look, yeah. So I'm going to go on to Lyme disease, merry-go-round hormones in the immune system, and yeast, and that is in your packet as well. It's a column I wrote a couple years ago. Maybe it was actually last December. Patients with chronic Lyme disease have weakened immune systems, which may allow intestinal yeast to overgrow. Well, I think you just mentioned something about that in an email, Alicia. If your immune system is weak, you don't catch all the yeast and they overgrow. But antibiotics, the mainstay of Lyme disease, destroy the beneficial gut bacteria and also cause yeast to overgrow. So you are between a rock and a hard spot. It also binds up estrogen, so people who have yeast can sometimes be estrogen deficient. Lyme disease patients get sicker and sicker due to a compromised immune system, hormone imbalance, and yeast overgrowth. If you are taking antibiotics, I would take a good probiotic. They say start it on the same day as the antibiotic. Take it about 4 to 6 hours apart from the antibiotic and continue it 2 weeks after you're done. So. I don't know how many are on antibiotics, whether you've gone through your course. Dr. Schallenberger thought there was a place for antibiotics only in very hot patients. Patients with rheumatic hot joints that had a flare-up. He said, of course, a doxycycline was beneficial to them. And he did for just a short course and then done with it. But he says doxycycline doesn't cause a overgrowth of intestinal yeast. But he said maybe that's because he only uses it for a short time. So a low-sugar, low-carbohydrate diet can kill off yeast by strengthening the immune system. There are some practitioners who treat yeast with immunotherapy. There's a great practitioner in Wauwatosa, one in La Crosse. You can go to a website called aaem.org, and it's the American Academy of Environmental Medicine. And they are very good at treating yeast and hormone imbalances and other things. A lot of times they treat allergies, but again, our allergies can be a result of immune system dysfunction. So,
Everything we're talking about.
Yep, exactly. Yes.
AAEM.org.
A German practitioner who specializes in Lyme felt that healing may be incomplete until the adrenal and thyroid glands are adequately supported, and adrenals first and then thyroid, but if you've already been treated for thyroid, obviously you're not going to stop that, but if you don't feel the best, try treatment for adrenals. Researchers have found adrenal glands increase natural killer cells and make thyroid more functional, the thyroid hormone work better. Okay, so let's move on. We're almost done. Dr. Schallenberger says that almost all of his Lyme patients have yeast. So we have a yeast newsletter, but he says almost all have yeast. And the most common infection is in the GI tract. And what's the primary symptom of yeast? Fatigue, feeling tired. And antibiotics are growth promoters. So when you take them, they put on weight. So that's what they do in animals. You give animals the antibiotics and give them specifically to make them fat. So it's not always the case that that happens, but sometimes that happens. But
most of the people lose weight.
Some people on antibiotics, well, you know.
Well, you find that.
Well, some do lose weight. You know, some do.
The,
it doesn't make everybody gain weight.
Yeah, put on 20 pounds for me.
Yeah.
Well,
it's hard to take off too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's. The carbs and the sugar will set it off, in other words.
The yeast, yes, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You'll feel it the next day immediately. Terrible.
Yeah, right. As we do get older, I totally hardly agree with you, you know. You really feel it.
You know it's a preventative.
Right, exactly.
As a result, you lose weight.
Yeah.
And most people do.
With yeast? Or with antibiotics?
Well, you eat sugar and carbs, you naturally kind of pull back because
you know the next evening
you're going to bring, you're not going to sleep well, and you're going to feel like you've got a triple hangover the next morning.
Yeah,
I know within seconds.
You do, when you eat sugar.
I tried yesterday to eat a strawberry, and I was...
Oh, even fruit sugar. Try the pulse test and see. Oh, you probably
I just don't eat any sugar. I try berries about four times a year because I'm like, they're low sugar. Maybe it'll work now.
Can't do it. Okay. Other symptoms are depression, dizziness, aches and pains, night sweats, morning stiffness. Fatigue after exercise can be a symptom of yeast. Let's go on. Quickly, we'll touch on the immune system. We have already touched on the immune system, but hormones modulate the immune system, and so does vitamin D. If you have an overactive immune system, it can dampen down. If you have an underactive, it can help sustain your immune system. Sugar is one of the most potent immunosuppressants around. There's a book on the table called The Lyme Diet, Dr. Nicola Fadzian, a naturopath. And she said 30 ounces of soda, which you probably don't drink, decreases the ability of white blood cells to kill microbes by 40% 30 minutes after drinking 30 ounces of soda, and it persists for 10 hours.
Wow.
So, I was shocked. I think I just glanced at that book, but I think
I'll order a cupcake.
Right up there.
Yeah, I think soda because it goes in so quickly, you know, it has such an impact. So studies have actually shown in mice where they've infected mice with Lyme that if the mice immune system or the mouse's immune system chemicals are high, like interleukin 1 and interferon, if their lab mice, was it mice or mice? No, mice.
If
lab mice and their chemicals are kept high on chemicals that support the immune system, natural chemicals, it counteracts tick saliva chemicals, and the rate of infection for Lyme rapidly drops off in these mice. So, immune system again.
What were they treated with? Just immune system?
They were giving them interleukin 1 and interferon, and they were trying to just shore them up and make sure their immune system worked really, really well. And then they were infecting with Lyme, and they were going to see how many died. And they found out they just had, they didn't, these aren't mice.
Yeah.
So,
they did die or they did die?
No, they didn't. No, not with a high functioning immune system.
Okay.
helped actually keep the saliva, the tick saliva chemicals from actually damaging the mice.
You give interleukin one, what else?
Interferon.
And Steve Buhner in his books gives herbs specific to those things, how to increase them. And I remember Japanese knotweed is resveratrol. It's the highest form of resveratrol that you can get on the market. Japanese knotweed, it tastes terrible.
Yeah,
but it's great stuff, and it does increase those items, the interferon, the leukon, and whatever.
I have taken a lot of tinctures. And they can be very powerful, and more so than antibiotics.
Oh, yeah.
They can make you really screw up.
They can.
But you don't want to
this
take too
one
much.
Shouldn't. This one shouldn't. I mean, it's an immune modulator. It might kill some, but it's mostly just to beef up your body.
Kutinita, that's a stimulant. And if you have any kind of cardiovascular problems.
Well, let me go.